Welcome to our Saturday simulcast. Special guest today, Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, Fox Sports, and also the BTN bracketologist. And of course, Mike Berghoff, the chair of the Board of Trustees, and our own Brian Newbert will join us in the first segment as well as we look ahead to Purdue Rutgers on Sunday. So enjoy the show, and thanks to our sponsors. The sponsor, of course, the Purdue Union Club Hotel, the Boiler Up Bar, the 811 Bistro, Leaps Coffee, everything they do for us, we're grateful for. Don't forget, you can also vote for them in the Marriott Bonvoy contest as a top hotel. So we appreciate that very much. And we'll, all right, we lead off the show with Brian Newbert. And Brian has been inundated with Purdue men's basketball and the Boilermakers' number two team in the country, as most of you know, fresh off of a romp over Michigan and headed to Brian's neighborhood, so to speak, Rutgers, for a match.
I prefer the term natural habitat.
Okay, your natural habitat. Well, in Jersey, that's the way it works, right? What is it Dylan says? In Jersey, everything's legal as long as you don't get caught. So one of my favorite songs, but that's another thing. All right, Brian, obviously Rutgers, and the narrative is, which is some, maybe somewhat silly, but we all, at least for me, I look at, well, they've lost three in a row there. They've lost Purdue, and it has nothing to do with this year. Rutgers is probably not quite the same team it was, certainly when they beat Purdue on Harper's half-court shot, or even when Rutgers beat Purdue in West Lafayette last year. But what do you expect? I mean, Purdue has shown well on the road at Iowa and Indiana and kind of taking care of business with teams that were desperate for wins, Indiana and Iowa. What do you, and Rutgers probably in the same boat if they want to get into the NCAA conversation, a win over the number two team, not the number one team, might be a good thing. But what do you expect to see on Sunday?
I would expect Purdue to take this one a little bit personal. I thought Purdue took the game at Indiana personal, and you know, they kind of owe Rutgers one. I don't know if any of that external stuff really matters in the locker room, but I just think Purdue's history with Rutgers here, losing a couple in Jersey Mike's arena. Sorry, it's a possessive.
It's his arena.
It's his arena. It is, in fact, his arena. Oil and vinegar everywhere. Anyway.
Yeah.
I would expect Purdue to take this one personal and kind of go into Rutgers with its eyes wide open to the reasons why Purdue has struggled with Rutgers. Rutgers has, you know, been tougher. They have played really hard. They have made it hard for Purdue to execute offensively. They have blunted some of Purdue's strengths on the glass, you know, things like that. And I just think Purdue's primed to take on a very different Rutgers team. You know, part of what's made Rutgers good over the years under Steve Peichel is they've had continuity in their program. They've played a certain way, and they've always kind of played like an underdog. And, you know, yeah. I think a lot of those things are kind of off the table now. That longstanding core of Ron Harper Jr., Geo Baker, Paul Mulcahy, and Caleb McConnell, it's all gone now. Those are the guys that Purdue struggled with to a certain extent. They're playing the same way. They're tough. They're pretty good defensively, but they really struggle from an offensive perspective. And I think, you know, Purdue could probably win this game relatively easily by scoring 70 points. And Purdue's on a run of 80, 80, 80, 80, 80 something on the road here. And I just think that it would be really, a lot would have to go sideways for Purdue here to not be able to finally get out of the rack with a win. That said, funny things happen. If Purdue turns the ball over, if Purdue just doesn't make a shot, if Zach Edey has a really bad game against Cliff Amore, if Rutgers gets a lot of second chances and has an atypical offensive game, you never know what's going to happen. But a lot would have to happen, I think, for this Rutgers team, which has really not been very good this year, to upset Purdue again. But I would expect Purdue to come out, take this personal, understand here's why we've struggled with Rutgers, and do everything in its power, led by the seniors, to get that win in the last arena. They need a win in to have run the table in the conference.
Yeah, Morey is really good inside. You're right. But he is running into Zach Edey. I mean, well, that presents some interesting challenges.
Well, he dunks and rebounds. He dunks and rebounds, and that's scary for a lot of people. But what's scary from a Purdue matchups perspective is guys who can play away from the basket, do some things against Zach Edey, you know, take advantage of him on the perimeter. That's not Cliff. Cliff is a guy who, you know, is going to get on the offensive glass, who's going to catch lobs, who's going to finish when things break down off the dribble. I just think having a big body on him and Purdue being able to throw a lot of big bodies at him is going to, you know, offset some of his strengths. I could be wrong, but I just don't know if he's got enough game to really be the sort of problem for Purdue that Rutgers has always had in its backcourt. So I could be wrong, but I just think he's not necessarily the sort of big that can give Purdue problems like the kid at Nebraska, Rink Mast, whatever his name is, did. Also dominated Ohio State, so I shouldn't talk about him like
he's really been good, like
he was a fluke. But no, I just think Purdue should have a big advantage there. You know, Amore's length and athleticism is going to get him a couple blocks. I think he kind of that's kind of baked into this. He's not going to be the easiest guy for Zach Edey to finish over. But even if they offset one another, which is a big ask from Rutgers' perspective, Purdue's, you know, still got more weapons here than Rutgers does. So
the rack also are Jersey Mike's apostrophe S. It is a 1 o'clock game on Sunday. I know that it's the number two team coming into Jersey Mike's, but maybe a little more subdued environment than it was at least a couple of years ago, which I think was a Thursday night. Obviously, Purdue was number one. That's a whole different deal, but or a little bit different deal, I should say. But how much that will matter, one never knows. You've written and talked about the emergence, and I don't know if it's the emergence, but maybe the upgrade of Lance Jones. And Jones is, you've talked about him being a complimentary guy coming in, or that was an expectation. He's gotten to be a lot more than that. The 24-point effort against Iowa, that being one case in point, but he has played very, very well in a number of different ways. How does that change Purdue's dynamic moving forward? I mean, he is just, he's doing a lot of things that help you win games.
Well, he's obviously completed them in terms of what he's given them in transition, you know, being able to change paces for Purdue offensively. Obviously been a really important defensive player, Purdue's best perimeter defender, probably by a wide margin. His energy, his personality, I think have really, really been godsends for Purdue, for lack of a better term. I've written before that, and I don't know if there's any basis to this in reality, but this season kind of profiled for Purdue like a season-long tension headache because of all the pressure that's going to be on them all year.
Yeah,
and I think bringing in a guy like Lance Jones with his enthusiasm, the joy he carries himself with, I think has been a real plus in that regard. Now, I could be completely wrong about that dynamic actually mattering, but I think he's huge from a team chemistry perspective. The fact that he's scoring the way he's scoring, had you told me back in like August, he's going to be your second leading scorer, I would have thought something went terribly awry.
Yeah.
And that, you know, Braden Smith or Fletcher Lawyer turned into a pumpkin or something like that. And they've been really good. He's just been really good too. Now, the volume of the threes he's taking is a little bit surprising. And I think there's still probably a little bit of streakiness in there, but every time I say that, he comes out and makes five threes in the next game. So, you know, perhaps I ought to acknowledge what is actually happening and not what I figured would happen. But he had said last year at SIU that he took too many threes. And that's kind of what I'm going based on, is that he thought at SIU last year he settled for too many threes. So I guess in these games when he takes like nine threes, I guess I kind of let his words guide my opinion. But he's making shots. He's making timely shots. He can create shots for himself. I think his decision-making is really important from here on out because he's going to have opportunities to drive past people, break down defenses. you know, things like that. I think the early shot clock threes, the 40 footers are pretty much out of his system.
The shots from Crawfordsville, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think during the non-conference season, you saw a guy who was settling in from being one type of player to being another type of player. But the mentality that comes with being that type of player is helping him in this different role as this type of player, if that makes any sense. I think he's coexisting fairly well with Zach Edey. I think he's coexisting fairly well with Fletcher Lawyer and Braden Smith. Those guys are very inclusive of him. This is a team that makes the extra pass, a very unselfish, very good ball movement team. And I think that's probably been fun for him. You know, he's always had the ball in his hands, I think, and now he's showing that he can do something different. So me thinking he might not have been ideally suited for what he's doing now is probably rooted in the fact he's never done this before. I mean, he's never played with a Zach Edey before, nor have most players before they get to college. He's always been a primary ball handler, not a secondary ball handler, but he's really, really fit in very well in that regard. And I think this Purdue team pretty much has it all. And I don't think that certainly wouldn't be the case if it weren't for Lance Jones, because his speed, his athleticism, his defense, his ability to create for himself has added another layer to this team that, you know, really has gone along well with the kind of the big three of, or the big four, I should say, of Zach Edey, Braden Smith, Fletcher Lawyer, and the combination of Trey Huffner and Mason Gillis.
One of the things about Lance Jones passing the ball that got a little bit of viral attention in a TikTok Twitter moment, and Miles Coleman's disdain, whether it was a 2 second disdain for not getting the ball passed to him. There's dynamics to that that we may have no idea about, but just talk about what on the surface, what you see with that and what that could mean, if anything or nothing, moving forward to this basketball team.
Yeah, I don't know if it was disdain as much as disappointment. He might have felt like he had an opportunity to do something in that situation. Probably reacted a little harshly in the moment. He's young. He's a freshman. Yeah. This is not a situation he's used to. It's hard. But you think Mason Gillis wouldn't want to be playing more and getting more shots too? That's the nature of this team. Is that people have to sacrifice. There's a lot of college teams out there and a lot of circumstances at Purdue that had they been in place now, he would be playing a really prominent role for Purdue, which isn't to say he's not, he hasn't at times this season. I mean, he's helped Purdue win games. But he's not, this just isn't his time. Next year, you know, things change profoundly for him. He's going to be one, he's, I would have to think he would be one of Purdue's kind of go-to scorers on a team that'll still have a bunch of them. But he just kind of has to wait his turn. He has to learn. Winning has to be important to him. And I don't have any reason to think that's not the case. But that's the important overlying element to this team for everybody who's not getting what they've probably capable of carrying or have earned. In the case of three upperclassmen coming off the bench who started X number of games for Purdue and helped Purdue win a hell of a lot of games, is that winning has to be important to them. And as I said before, I have no reason to think that winning is not important to Miles Colvin, but I think he'd probably prefer to be winning while also playing a pretty prominent role. This is a guy who has been, you know, the best player on every team he's ever played for, with the exception of maybe the USA basketball thing that this past summer. His time will come. It's just kind of hard to be patient when you're young and you're used to being the star. But the biggest thing is that his time will come. In the meantime, that doesn't mean there's not going to be disappointment. There's not going to be frustration. That's part of the process.
I want to throw a football question at you, just because you understand the landscape of the big picture of college sports, but also I want to ask you just about Jim Harbaugh and that move.
Uh-oh.
Has nothing to do with Purdue, but and you only get 2 minutes to answer, but talk about that, and it doesn't have any bearing really on Purdue, even Purdue football, I don't think, from this standpoint. But what do you take of all that? Is that, were you one that would not surprised that this he was going all along? Well, okay, the clock's going. Okay, there you go. Thank you.
No,
I much appreciate it. Fire away.
The funny thing about coaches is once they're in the NFL, they always want to go back.
Yeah.
You don't get that out of your blood. And I think him losing the Super Bowl to his brother, I think, is probably always eating at him. The fact that this was, he would have been gone last year, I think, had the Vikings actually hired him. I think he was kind of primed for this. And you know what? This is going to sound stupid, but if I'm Michigan, this guy has been a big winner, and that's all that matters. But you might be better off without some of the drama. I mean, this is a guy who nonsense always follows him, and that stuff in the NFL will fly if you're winning. And at the same time, I don't know if he'll cause the same drama in the NFL that he did at
Michigan, yeah.
Michigan. But Michigan is a really proud place, as you might have noticed, and for them to have been part of some of the embarrassing headlines and the embarrassing brouhahas they were this year. Now they're all biased, so they wouldn't call it embarrassing. They would call it a witch hunt or something.
Yeah.
But Michigan in itself should carry on. It's one of the best jobs in college football. It's one of the most advantaged jobs in college football. So they'll be fine. What Harbaugh did obviously changed things pretty dramatically from his predecessors, but he didn't do anything out of the ordinary. I mean, he didn't do anything revolutionary in terms of football. What they did was they played defense, they tackled, they ran the ball, and they played good, fundamentally sound football, and they got players. And you should always be able to do that at Michigan's. So,
Are we out of time?
my bad,
Oh,
you're
you're
out of time.
out. Yeah.
So it didn't surprise me one bit that he left. And what opens my eyes a little bit is the profound sadness at Michigan when everybody knew this was coming. And
Yeah.
like, how many times can you be the butt of jokes and not let that wear thin on you? He's obviously getting out before whatever punishment might come down, is coming down. I don't think they were ever keeping him. I understand they tried to offer him the moon and the stars to stay, but I think he wants a Super Bowl.
Yeah, well said. And pretty succinctly said. All right. We appreciate your time. Safe travels to your natural habitat. And we'll look forward to your coverage on Sunday afternoon. That will tip 1 o'clock, a matinee at Jersey Mike's.
Is it
And
1 o'clock? I thought it was 2 o'clock.
there's a two. I may have my
It doesn't
time
matter.
screwed up. You'll get there on time. They don't have any games at 1 o'clock. Maybe it is at two. I don't know why I had it down at one, but. Either way, we'll check your local listings and you'll find the time for this game. All right, we'll be back in a couple minutes with
1
our
p.m. You're right.
segment two. Will be Mike DeCourcy, and of course Mike Berghoff joins us in seg three, and we'll enjoy their perspectives as well. Ryan, thanks again, and safe travels. With Mike DeCourcy, next segment here, and Mike, always gracious enough to join our show at least once a year. We try not to bug the heck out of him. He is a busy man, with Fox Sports, BTN studio analyst, sporting news, on and on. He has been a contributor to basketball for a long time and one of the best at it, to say the least. All right, I want to talk to Mike. Purdue is not really the flavor of the month because it's been really good this year and last year. But to talk about, let's start with the Boilermakers and just your impressions. An impressive win over Michigan, a Michigan team that's in very desperate straits. And yet Purdue's got to go to that nemesis Rutgers on Sunday, a team that's beaten them the last three times they've been to Piscataway.
It's a hard place to play.
Yeah.
And Rutgers is a hard team to play against. That's something that Steve Peichel has cultivated. Making it difficult to play against them is where they begin the game. And then they try to progress from there on offense. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I think that one of the best ways to combat that is to make yourself hard to play against.
Yeah.
And for Purdue, that's not, their style is not totally gritty, let's be sandpaper. They'll guard you obviously, and Zach's ability in the middle makes it hard to go against them and to get the shots you ordinarily want to get. I do think that there is a greater disparity at their core, at their base. There's a greater disparity between this Purdue team and this Rutgers team than has existed for a while. This Rutgers team is in development. It's a shame for Cliff Amore because he's having a great year, and they struggle to score around him sometimes. Sometimes they struggle to get him the ball, and when they're able to get him the ball in good situations, he's as good a finisher as there is in college basketball. It'll be an interesting matchup between Cliff and Zach. Certainly, at the very least, the game will be appealing for that reason.
Yeah, Sunday matinee, so to speak, in New Jersey. When you look at Purdue and Zach, even you were around when Ralph Sampson won back-to-back College Players of the Year. Help me put the right words about what Zach Edey is, and really in the history of college basketball, not just this season. He's been unbelievable.
Well, he has, and as long as he remains healthy, that's really the only component, the variable between now and March. He will be the National Player of the Year. I think RJ Davis having a great year at Carolina, but I don't think he's rising to the level of what Zach is doing. And I think this is the full list of the Oscar Robertson Trophy, which is the oldest trophy other than the Sporting News Player of the Year. So I'm going to use the Oscar Robertson Trophy because it goes back to Oscar. The list of players who've won multiple Players of the Year award with the Oscar Robertson Trophy, which is presented by the United States Basketball Writers Association, I believe is Oscar, Jerry Lucas, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Pete Maravich, Bill Walton, and Ralph Sampson. I believe that's the entire list. I don't even know if I need to expound beyond that. To put your achievement on the level with those gentlemen is amazing. And I do one of the things that I talked about on BTN was that there's a tendency because of the Zach being 7 foot 4, 285, 290, whatever the number is. According to Matt, it depends on how many burgers he had there the day before. Sushi, yes,
There you go.
Because of his size, people think it's easy. And I just challenge them to look around college basketball. I don't want to single anybody out, but there are other 7'4" players out there. There are 7'5" players out there who aren't a fraction of what Zach is. It's not just being tall. It's all the work that goes into being more dynamic, so dynamic now relative to where he was his first 3 years of college basketball, that now the NBA finally looks at him and says, wait a second, we might be able to do something with this guy. And Jonathan Givony, the terrific draft analyst for ESPN, puts him in the lottery now. I don't think anybody thought that that was a possibility before. So that go and that all goes to the work he's done. I mean, because although he's a great finisher, and he's a great he's a terrific free throw shooter, and he can protect the rim. That was all pretty much in place a year ago. What wasn't in place was the work he did on his body to become more mobile, better able to defend on the perimeter, not a problem in screen defense, but at times a weapon. All of those things were from the considerable work he put into the 2023 offseason, and it's reflected on the floor night after night.
You've covered this for a long time. There really haven't been many stories more. I mean, there have been a lot of great college basketball stories over the years, but this is really a unique one. I mean, just where he's come from. Matt Painter talks about, he's a youthful basketball player in terms of basketball life. He's only played, what, 6, 7 years or whatever that is. Put that in perspective as well. I mean, it is still an amazing story that Purdue fans probably shouldn't, or college basketball fans shouldn't take for granted.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to necessarily say that he has to have the same career, but since we've already talked him in the same sense with Tucker and Pistol and Kareem, I think that we can point out that there's a similarity in his basketball youth to Hakeem Olajuwon. When Hakeem came over from Nigeria to the United States, he played relatively little basketball. There's also a similarity to a degree to Joel Embiid. Who played some in Africa before he moved here, and then when he got to Florida, where he played in high school, prep school, he hadn't played much, and he didn't make an immediate impact at his prep school. And then he comes to KU and is one of the best players in the country before he gets hurt. So there, I think there's a similarity there too. It because it now I don't I, where his size makes a difference is. Like, there's not a lot of point guards out there that just picked up the game when they were 15, you know? So obviously, the people that we're talking about are big guys, but they also are big guys. The other thing they have in common, they were athletes, just didn't happen to be playing basketball. They played a lot, both Embiid and Hakeem played a lot of soccer before they came to the United States. Hakeem played a lot of it. And then, of course, we know Zach's history, baseball player, a little bit of hockey, and then all of a sudden decides to devote himself to playing basketball, and the results are spectacular.
Yeah, they have been absolutely that. All right, your bracket this week, Houston on the rise. Purdue still looks like your overall number one seed. Any scenario, there's always scenarios where Purdue isn't a number one seed. I get that, but the path for Purdue looks to be Indianapolis, Detroit, and then hopefully, if you're a Purdue fan, Arizona. But to talk about that and just some of the teams, you know, North Carolina's obviously made a huge jump or made a jump. Teams to really watch out for. Kansas that loss to West Virginia was quite startling. But to talk about some of the teams that you're looking at that maybe laying in the weeds a little bit as we enter February.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think first of all, for Purdue, what they have to avoid is what Kansas has done more than once, which is lose to teams on the road that aren't NCAA contenders. There is a scenario in which UCF, Central Florida, can create an NCAA tournament path for itself. It's still a ways away. That's not possible for West Virginia. West Virginia's only path to the NCAA tournament is to win
Win the
the
Big
Big
12.
12 automatic. So that and for Purdue, you know, their opponent is whoever's on the court that night in themselves. Because if they do well in the Big Ten, as they have over the first relative the first half of Big Ten play, if they do the same things, give or take, and probably give, because I think they don't play in Nebraska on the road and Northwestern on the road. If they do the same things over the second half, the only team that's out there that is a threat to them being where they want to be, specifically Detroit, because they're almost certain to wind up in Indianapolis. They're going to be a one or a two because you look at the three line. I'm working on tomorrow's bracket. I can barely find threes. They're just not there. The line between one and two is significant. The line between two and three is precipitous. So they'll get Indy, but if they want Detroit too, KU is probably the biggest threat. It's the only team out there that would half want to be there. They might, you know, they might not make any difference for them to be there or Houston. So if Purdue gets its one, it's probably going to Detroit. So that's a good thing. And so it really, like I said, it really just has to focus on itself and the opponent on that given night. UConn is probably a one, but they're going to want to be in Boston very badly because it's just a few hours drive. The one in the West, probably Houston at this point. The competition for that's probably Arizona. So again, Purdue's really in a good position geographically right now because they're going, you know, if they get the one, and it's up to them in large part. If they get it, then they'll probably get it where they want it, which would be the Midwest.
Yeah, I think of that. You're a logical guy. That makes sense in a sometimes illogical situation, to say the least. But I think that's true. All right, let's talk a little bit about the psyche of Purdue and what's gone on. You know, obviously the 16 seed defeat. I think it appears, watching it on a day-to-day basis, that Purdue has dealt with that well. Matt Painter's keep the focus on living in the present. Which is a good idea, and Matt Painter's a smart guy, and I think you and I both would agree, pretty excellent basketball coach. But talk about that though, and just that you know, Virginia got it done. I know, and back in 2019, over Purdue's dead body, so to speak, but they got it done. What do you see from that standpoint? And as Purdue works its way to that, what I think will be the third weekend in March when this thing all starts. How do you approach that? Or do you see Purdue approaching this the right way, or they just got to take care of business as they go?
You know, I one of the things, when I went to their game against Xavier, which was first or second game of the year, I sensed a little bit of, man, it's a long way to March. Yeah. And I didn't see in them the typical Purdue. There felt like that. Oh, we're going to get these guys. We're at home. And man, you know, do we really want to put it all out there? And this is not a conscious thing. It's always a subconscious thing. But
sure.
I've covered college athletics for 40 years. I've seen it in teams time after time. And it's not something I'm condemning. It's something that's natural. It's just how you manage it.
Yeah.
And so the best thing for them at that point in the year was, oh, now we got to go to Maui. Well, go ahead and take that attitude on the floor against the teams they had to play out there.
Yeah.
You're going home 1-2 with a win over Chaminade or whatever.
Yeah.
You got to play. And they did. And you saw right there, oh, wow, this at their best, they're really something. And then the same in the Arizona game here in Indy. They at their best, they really can bring it. And I think that there have been moments so far this season where a little bit of that creeped in, and or maybe just the other team, in particular Northwestern Nebraska, understanding what beating Purdue could do for them, brought everything they had. You know, they moved the whole living room onto the floor. You know, they had brought everything they had, and Purdue was like, "Hey, we're just here to hoop." You know, it's like, and that's not, you know, that's not going to get them through and against a team that sees them as a ticket. Recently, the Indiana game, I knew that wasn't going to happen because of what happened a year ago. So you knew they were going to bring their best effort. But I thought the Iowa game was a breakthrough, because Iowa is a team that came into that game no less ambitious than Northwestern and Nebraska, but more desperate, because Nebraska already had some good wins under their belt. Northwestern had the Dayton win. Iowa has a good team and no big wins. And so that was a huge game for them. And as well, Iowa is a team that can get you playing basketball.
Yeah.
And, you know, up and down, having fun, we're all good. And all of a sudden they throw in six threes in the final 5 minutes and you lose. And Purdue wasn't having any of that. I thought that was a real statement of intent by the Boilers that, okay, yeah, we let a few go early in the year, but that's not going to happen now. Somebody's going to have to be A, really good, and B, at their absolute best in this league. They're going to, and they're going to obviously have to be at home. I don't think the Boilers are going to lose at Mackey. So
yeah.
I think those three things all have to be in place for the Boilers to lose at full strength. And let's hope that this team gets to play the whole year at full strength, because the last thing that we would want to see after what's happened the last couple of years is them not getting to take their best shot at erasing that.
Yeah, no question. Braden Smith has been really good. Guard play, there's been a lot of talk about the being 1 year older for Fletcher Lawyer and Braden Smith. But talk about those guys and what they mean. Obviously, you know more than anyone that the NCAA really comes down, a lot of it comes down to great guard play. Purdue seems to have enough of that. But how do you view that at this point?
They have more than enough, Alan. When you got a guy like Miles Colvin that can't get on the floor. And I think Miles's entry has been good for Lance Jones and for Fletcher Lawyer. I think his presence is a motivator. because they know like that if Miles got his shot, he might not ever give it back. He's really talented. We saw in the Xavier game, the Alabama game, what he was capable of delivering when it was necessary to help them win. I'm not convinced that he might not yet still, even with the team at full strength, be needed at a moment and deliver. I think he's terrific. Braden is just a year older. He was already terrific. He was already an outstanding point guard in the league. He's just a year older, a little bit smarter from the experiences that he went through last year. He's probably a better shooter. But I think Fletcher has gained strength. He's gained confidence, and he's gained that motivation of knowing, look, I'm the guy because I've been here, but the guy behind me can really play. So I've got to be at my best. And I think that's helped him a lot to be the player he's been as a sophomore.
Yeah, Miles Cullen came off against Michigan, 9 points in a hurry. Just 9 points in 7 minutes. He can show that he can do that. And that's an excellent point that I hadn't really thought of, that whole motivation factor. And Lance Jones has been phenomenal. That has made a big difference as well. Okay, last question for you. Northwestern Illinois on Wednesday night. The beauty of college basketball. I don't know how much you got it, were able to see that game, but just what a great game. And it ended up probably working best for Purdue because Northwestern wins that game and puts another loss in Illinois' ledger. But talk about just that and just the phenomenal, even Purdue in the court storming situations, it's still been great, great theater for the other team a lot of times. But talk about just the state of college basketball. And I thought one of the best games I've seen in a long time was Wednesday night, Northwestern's overtime win over Illinois.
It was a phenomenal game, Alan. Just wonderful basketball. And a game that might not have been played a year ago. I think, although I do believe the talent overall in college basketball is down, you see that reflected in the mock drafts, that four of the first five are in USA Today's I looked at, four of the first five were international or G League players. That's not great for college basketball. You want the best players to be in NCAA, and most years they are. This year, it's just not as elite. But what college basketball's done, and I don't think it was because of that, but the change in the charge rule has made the game so much more attractive. There's all that flopping is gone, all that diving in front of driving players who are totally committed to the drive. And you dive in at the last second and then all of a sudden they're supposed to somehow stop their progress when they were clearly moving forward and clearly moving toward going into the air. All of that's gone. So guys can get to the rim now. You see dunks, you see layups, you see action around the rim. I think the game itself is so much more attractive. And all of that was on display in the Illinois Northwestern game. And there's a bit of a rivalry there. They've had a nice rivalry over the years. Not one of the best in the Big Ten, but one that pops up as a cool little rivalry. And that you saw some just terrific players, especially Boo Booey. Yeah. What he brought down the stretch was amazing. You know, we had this thing on Big Ten Basketball and Beyond on Sunday where we did this guard draft. Who are the best guards in the Big Ten? And it went back and forth, and I got the first pick, and I picked Boo, and then Raphael took Jameer Young, and it went from there. And after Boo's performance, especially in overtime on Thursday night, I tweeted at Raphael. I said, "I think I won the guard draft tonight." Yeah. And then he brought up, "Yeah, well, Jameer just made a buzzer beater yeah. beat Iowa. So are you sure about that?" I'm still sure. What Boo did against Illinois was phenomenal. The ability to get to the rim, the ability to make the jump shots, really entertaining. Marcus Damask, a great player. You know, I didn't ever really think Illinois was going to hang in the league race to the extent that it'll be Purdue versus Wisconsin. I always thought Illinois would be in the picture, but not on the top two in the medal stand. That they might be the bronze kind of, you know, down a little bit toward the ground. I think that game was also a good statement for what Illinois can do in a tough environment against a team that gets really hot. I thought Illinois guarded them well for the most part, but it was just hard to keep track of, Ty Berry making all those threes, and Boo himself kind of defies almost every game plan when he's on.
Yeah, absolutely amazing basketball. A lot to talk about. Mike, thanks so much for your time. It's always insightful. You always bring something to the table that I might not have pondered, and I appreciate that so much. We'll look forward to seeing your work. That bracketology thing is a head on a swivel moment every week for you. I get that. We appreciate that. Of course, your great work on BTN with some really great guys, Ray Davis, Bruce Weber, the Purdue contingent, even Rob Hummel from time to time. Pretty good company from the Purdue world that are fun to talk some basketball. So have a great rest of your week. Thanks so much for your time. And we'll be back for our next segment with Board of Trustees Chair Mike Berghoff. And we'll talk a little for Purdue sports and what the future may hold. That'd be another conversation for Mike DeCourcy down the road. Where is all this going? But we'll get to that later. Take care, Mike. Thanks so much. Segment three, and we're joined by Mike Berghoff, chair of the Purdue Board of Trustees. And we always appreciate that Mike is a busy man, that he takes some time to, we could probably do a 2-hour show on the future of college athletics and the role of higher ed and all that. We're going to try to drill that down a little bit today, and maybe even talk about that Purdue men's basketball team that seems to be occupying our thought process a lot of late. Mike, thanks for your time, and always appreciate you joining the show.
Yeah, I enjoy being on it.
All right, Mike, let's talk some basketball here. I mean, obviously Sunday Purdue will take on Rutgers. We know that can be a little bit, has been a challenge for Purdue the last three games, and guys make half court shots and things like that seem to happen there. You were a student athlete at a high level. You've played at this, you've seen this. This seems to be everything indication with what Matt Painter has brought to the table. This is a different operation to Purdue's bringing based on how well they took care of business in Indiana, Iowa. You have to like what you see from Purdue so far.
Yeah, it's just such an improved team. We were good last year.
Yeah.
But our talent is pretty broad this year. We have lots of guys with minutes. We have, the addition of Lance was big. We have another shooter. It helps kind of novices like me who don't really know how to study basketball strategy, but it's easy to understand now because we've seen teams collapse in on Zach and making it easy for us to pass it back out for the triple. And now we have three guys who can do that. And usually at least two of them, are hitting their average. So it's a big help. It's fun.
Yeah, it has been a lot of fun. We talked offline before we get started about just the interest in Mackey and how, and we'll get into NIL and all that in a bit, but just why Mackey Arena now. It always has been a great place, even back when you were in school. It was a phenomenal place for basketball. It has raised even to another level where it is one of the top two or three places, if not the top place in the country, and that helps with retention, I think, of players and getting players here. But just talk about how the university and athletics have positioned itself and helped that cause to make it even extra special from your perspective.
Yeah, I would say a couple of things. One, we were gifted with a structural design around arena that puts you right on top of the court. The capacity is sufficient. But it's not too big where you feel like, you're too far removed. Lots of great seats in there. And we've just made, minor improvements over the last, I guess it's almost 60 years now.
Yeah.
The other thing is we've not compromised our relationship with our student body. Some folks would have shrunk that down in order to increase revenue. But there's such a large part of the atmosphere in there and a factor in the success we have because, they lift the team and rattle the opponent. Yeah. So, people have a hard time accepting, people who've never been there have a hard time accepting it's almost annual ranking at either the first or second or third, but it only takes one visit before you realize what's really special about the place.
Yeah, it's almost become I should say, the Wrigley Field of college basketball, where it is a destination for college basketball fans. It is a place you want to go to Cameron Indoor Stadium, you want to go to Phog Allen, you want to go to Mackey Arena. It seems to be pretty much the same from that standpoint. All right, you look now at the challenges of this team. Obviously, the sky's the limit. And this is another year with Matt Painter and having to do a difficult thing. And that is be able to put what's happened in the NCAA tournament, even though they've had a lot of success, kind of in its place and move ahead to another great year. Talk about that just from a leadership perspective and what that takes from a leader to be able to do that, what seems to be very well so far in a team that is extremely focused on living in the moment, it appears.
Yeah, I think there might be more than two ways to look at this, but there's really only two. And if you're a student athlete, one of them is, I think, just captured perfectly by Zach's comment, we have some unfinished business to attend to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, if that's not a rallying cry for gutting out a 30 game season in order to get to the Final Four and win a national championship, I don't know what is. It put goosebumps on me when he said that. And everything you see about this team seems to reflect that they've adopted that attitude. It's a marathon.
Yeah.
It's not a one game wonder, but just use every day, every game to improve and be ready for the tournament. And yeah. I think these guys in this team have done an incredible job of dealing with the loss and focusing on this season.
With Mike Berghoff, chair of the Purdue Board of Trustees, when you look now at the big picture of college athletics, and it's perplexing to anybody, I think, in terms of where all this heads, but also from where you sit, I mean, on the Board of Trustees and trying to keeping Purdue's reputation not only as an academic institution, but also keep it as a high-level athletic competitive environment. What keeps you focused and feeling confident on the future of all this? Or is this just a time where you got to sit through and see where things fall and how to deal with them?
Well, a couple of things. One, I took a deep breath as you started to describe what was going on, and it's just reflective of the challenge, right? Yeah. It's not something that we can easily control, like many other things that you're confronted with. Secondly, we stay in this thing, in this process, trying to influence the process, because we don't really believe you can be a comprehensive public, one of the nation's most comprehensive public universities without strong athletics, because strong athletics just reinforce there's a commitment to excellence about everything we do, both academically and athletically. So that's the second thing. Third thing is, without our engagement, we're concerned that we're going to arrive at a solution that's not very good. And so we all can be very, very thankful that we have Mike Bobinski as our athletic director, one of the most senior, most respected ADs in the country, and helping by providing strategy assistance to our new commissioner during all of the discussions we're having both with Congress and other conferences about how do we make the most out of this, and how do we find the very best pathway for the Big Ten to continue to be a leading conference but retain its commitment to student athletes. It's a challenge, but we'll get it done. Just not sure what it's going to look like or how quickly.
Well, in your business life, work life, and even in your board life, we are used to having solution A, solution B, solution C, yep. Probably one of those three. This is one of them that is really, really challenging, I think, from that perspective, is you don't know the end result, and you've got to have enough well-meaning folks and smart folks to and everybody invested in the right way to get this done. I mean, is it as simple as it, we can all we being all of college athletics, from administrators to student athletes down the line, row the boat, so to speak, in the same direction? Is that what it's going to take? Or is it just, We'll see what it's going to take.
Yeah, I think it's quartered into segments. There's going to be a group in one quarter segment that is probably going to benefit more than the other two or three or four quarters, and we need to be in that first quarter.
Yeah.
But it's a challenge, and I'm guessing if you asked this, mostly because there's so many moving parts. You know, you have player issues, you have compensation issues, you have conference issues, you have litigation that's existing, and all this needs to be dealt with at the same time. If you asked all of the athletic directors, this might be the most challenging period in college athletics ever.
I think that's a fair assessment, but boy, it is a perplexing thing to envision. What is it at the end of the tunnel? All right. You also, obviously, as a chair of the board of trustees and your colleagues on the board, you have many hats that you wear, but one of them is also to work very closely with the president, and you have a new one, and a relatively new one, I should say, in Meng Cheng. Yep. Talk about his. You know, he's different. Everybody, he's following a hard act to follow in Mitch Daniels, but also his how the board interacts with him with respect to athletics and how that marriage, so to speak, is working out so far.
We're very fortunate in this transition, especially in a lot of different ways. Both Meng's passion for Purdue and our mission for economic development. And for excellence. I mean, you've heard his biggest rallying cry is excellence at scale. We're big and we have to be excellent. He also loves to win. He's very competitive, no matter what the project is. And that includes sports. You know, he wants to crush people. You know, when people say, we must crush them.
Yeah.
You know, that says something. We also had that. We had that in Mitch. He was a terrific, terrific competitor, wanted to win all the time, and sometimes couldn't bear to watch a game because he got so wound up about it. And then, you know, he would get text messages and turn his phone off. So, you know, we have a real fan in athletics with Meng, and he knows what it takes, what's required. To win, it's not just a will. You have to provide them with the tools they need, and we're very, very fortunate to have that. And we get along really well. He's different.
Yes,
you know, he's got a family, which is awesome. You know, he has three children who are all living at Westwood with him. Augie is a huge sports fan. His son. The middle one, and you know, they've traveled, they went out to Hawaii, and our fan base and our alumni like seeing that, and we're glad he does. And then on the academic side, you know, he has his foot on the pedal. He's very proud of Purdue and wants to make sure that everybody else understands why. So he's a huge ambassador, travels all the time to carry the message forward and help make Purdue you know, be viewed as one of the most consequential public land grant universities in the country. And we're lucky to have him.
Many members of the board, if not all, are really are very present in athletic events, men's and women's, on a regular basis. I mean, you got Joanne Brietz, as big a fan as you're ever going to find, on down the line. But talk, it hasn't all, even since your time, this is what, 15th year now on the board.
Thanks.
Alignment is so challenging and yet important. I mean, you were able to get that accomplished, I think, with I'm talking the president, the athletic director, the board. That's a tough thing that's been able, but it seems to be as much in concert as it's ever been at this point. And talk about, because you've talked in the past about the importance of that, and not every school has that, and that can really, really make for a challenge if that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I am really, really thankful that we have alignment on how you create a high-performing team. And that includes managing reporting structures and organizational structures in a way that it allows the superstars that you hire to perform and do their job without inappropriate interference, but tons of support. And somehow we've managed to excel in this area. I think we are very unique in that. You're right to bring that up, because Mike gets to do his job, Mung gets to do his job, and the board does our job, and you weave it in a way. Oh, by the way, the coaches matter too, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure I have an answer for it, except we've had some governors who've made some really thoughtful appointments to the board, because they care about Purdue more than they care about an appointment that might enrich their contributions in their political fundraising. So, you know, all the way from Mitch to Governor Pence to Governor Holcomb, they've helped a lot in that way, and we can be proud of that. So I don't know. We have a formula that works, and it's pretty rare.
All right. I mean, we have a couple more questions. One on that 38-year-old football coach you have in Ryan Walters. And,
yep.
And how, you know, head on a swivel world that he lives in, you know, you look at his situation, and every college, I think college football is probably, it is example A of the challenges ahead in the NIL transfer portal world. Talk about his skill set and, you know, his January right after an entire season, like I said, is just craziness in terms of how to deal with that. But more from what you see him and how he internalizes that and how he seems to move forward in this wonderful world of complete instability in college football.
Yeah, what an assignment. I was in on the interview with Coach. And was very impressed. He came very prepared, almost in a business CEO manner. He had an organizational chart laid out that included a couple of components that you wouldn't normally see in a football operation. He had his targeted assistant coaches ranked 1, 2, and sometimes 3. If he could get the first one, great. If not, here's the second one, here's the third one. So he's very prepared, very thoughtful, very organized, but he also has a lot of passion and compassion for the game. He loves to play football. He loves football, and it helps him with his recruiting because it's really obvious. He's a younger guy, so he's closer to the players than most coaches are, which helps a lot, and so is his staff. So from a football standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, that showed right away. What we also had to consider, but probably wasn't realized until recently, is how effective can he be in this new world of NIL? Used to be the head coach had to be the strategist and the leader and the recruiter. Now it's almost like their primary responsibility is fundraising.
Yeah.
And that's different. Okay. Well, he's really good at it because he can communicate a vision to donors and explain what's required to make this vision reality. And part of the reality is funding for the NIL. And he's a good partner to have on the fundraising. We've done a number of these together, Coach and I and others. David Neff, now our new CEO. Mm-hmm. Mike Babinski's been involved. And so we've had a fair amount of success. It took us a little while to figure out. And but we've had a fair amount of success, and Coach has a lot to do with it.
That group of the Boilermaker Alliance, and of course, we work with them a little bit on
right.
a content perspective, and it is truly another thing that you have to manage, and yet separate from the university, so to speak, but so tied together. Where do you see the collective world going? Do you think we'll have collectives 5 years from now? Or is that another one that you just don't know how this world comes out? But looking at down the road, that role of the collective and the role of the Boilermaker Alliance, give me an evaluation of that.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that the solution that ends up being adopted addresses addresses student athlete compensation, you know, in a way that's uniform and doesn't require coaches to be fundraisers.
So
I'm hopeful that's what will happen. But until then, we have to compete. We have to raise funds. And that's just the reality. I think most people understand, I believe most people understand the commitment a student athlete makes. And, you know, their clock is almost totally absorbed on the sports footprint, facilities, location. They're there all the time. And they really can't have a job. So that, you know, there is some need. There is a need for these student athletes to be compensated. We just need to figure out in a way that it's fair to the student athletes, and it allows the colleges to be a viable, lasting entity. And so, but until then, the Boilermaker Alliance, we're all in. We're supporting them. We're encouraging our donors to donate. We're also encouraging them not to forget about Purdue University academics and the other pieces of it. And they've really responded. They get it. And most of them get it. Not everybody. But I'm hoping this is a short-term environment, and we'll come up with a long-term environment that makes better sense for the players and the universities.
All right. Last question is an impossible one probably, but all right. You add Ohio, you add Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA to this league. And the Big Ten has got a great reputation. I mean, both of us are graduates of a Big Ten school, and it's important to us. How do you keep that level? And I understand the four schools that were added are all AAU schools. That you haven't compromised your academic standing. But is this still going to be, again, I'm going to ask you to tell me Mike Berghoff at age 70, what is it going to look like then? Is it still going to be, is the Big Ten system, the academic athletic tie, how do you keep that in this world?
Yeah, I think the answer to that question comes out to the solution that gets presented by the outcome of how do we balance out compensation to student athletes, the lawsuits that are making their way through the courts, the review of the different conferences. There's a lot of balls that are juggling. Yeah. I'm hopeful that folks like Purdue, who have been in the big, you know, who are in, you know, one of the two probably most significant conferences, end up on the winning side of this. That's our plan, and that's what we want to have happen. But I just don't see that there's any way that some of the schools aren't negatively impacted, and their athletics is going to be a lot different than it's been before, and ours will too. But we want to end up with the right balance and the product offering that our fans can be excited about supporting.
And one quick follow-up. Negative, you think even in the Big Ten, that group of 18 will be, there'll be somebody that may be left out of the dance long-term, or are you talking about the big picture of all the 130-some Division I football programs? How do you do
that? I'm thinking the Big Ten and, you know, pick another conference. I'm not sure which one that is. Will be on the favorable side of the outcome, because we are now, really. Yeah. I mean, if you look at it. And right now we're spending time making sure that happens.
Yeah.
Because that's where we belong. But the outcome is probably more difficult to predict than any other topic of issue or issue college athletics has ever had.
Fair, and that's kind of been the crux of our conversation, is that there's a lot of balls in the air, and that will be interesting. Speaking of which, Board of Trustees will meet next week. You've got a lot of that going on. Anything athletic wise on it that you can share on the agenda, or anything hot button issues as we bring this to a close?
No, nothing really with athletics. I'm working on the agenda right now.
And there you go. So that's what the chair does.
Yeah, I need to make sure that we have something substantive to talk about.
Yeah. Next
week. But no, our athletics. Well, there are, you know, people are asking questions about tickets.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I think I have this close to true that the first round of the NCAA tickets, almost all of the participants in there end up with about 100 tickets.
Yeah.
So that's not
very many. You don't have enough.
It's not very many. So I hope our fans understand that and be patient, because that's what we're up against.
Yeah. If all goes to plan, Purdue will be playing in Indianapolis and maybe even in Detroit. There's still a few games left to play and there things are. That can change, but that's the way it's trending at this point. Mike, thanks so much for your time, especially all this extra time today. It's always enlightening. Safe travels when you're heading up I-65 to West Lyon.
Thanks to Mike Berghoff, Mike DeCourcy, and Brian Newbert for another stellar show. We appreciate them very much, and we'll look forward to next week as we head into that big Wisconsin game in Madison. We'll have another Saturday simulcast for you then with some special guests. Thanks for watching. Thanks to Purdue Union Club Hotel. And don't forget that you can subscribe to us on goldenblack.com and also make sure that you leave a positive comment on YouTube too. And subscribe to us on YouTube as well. A lot of ability to subscribe to goldenblack.com, and we hope that you do so. Have a great rest of your weekend, all.